on my Heidi Mikey Tane Hōtaka. Welcome to the panel. Wallace Chapman with you today. First up, five people have been injured in a stabbing at Dunedin's Countdown supermarket on Cumberland Street at about 2:30pm today. Police say one person has been taken into custody. Our reporter Tim Brown is at the scene and he joins me now. Tim, kia ora.
Kia ora, Wallace.
What do we know so far?
Well, details of what exactly has happened here are still very scant. I understand that five people are injured, at least one critically. Among those five, two staff members from the Countdown. The offender the suspected offender has been taken into custody.
What injuries have been reported, Tim?
As I said, it's understood that one person has been critically injured. The details on the others are not clear yet. I have spoken to one witness who said that there was a lot of blood in the area. They didn't see the attack itself. They just came out later on and said there was a lot of blood. There's a lot of people in shock in this area. Staff are in tears, are hugging each other. There's a lot of pain in the supermarket today.
And this is a central city supermarket, isn't it? Cumberland Street. Is the area, what is it, completely cordoned off?
The supermarket itself is cordoned off. It's got a large open-air car park outside of it. That area has been blocked at all entrances by police. However, around the wider inner-city area, the police are moving it up. People are moving about, buses are still running, cars are going past on the main street just beside the Countdown.
And do we know if police are looking for anyone else in relation to this incident?
I don't believe that police are looking for anyone else. We're still waiting to get an actual update from the police. We're told that they will be giving us an update at some point outside the police station, which happens to be next door to the Countdown. But at this point, it's not understood that they are looking for anyone else.
No. And finally, Tim, what have we heard from Countdown?
I haven't managed to speak to Countdown myself, but all the staff members have been asked not to speak to the media, so they've been making their way straight past us. I haven't heard word from Countdown personally.
All right, reporter Tim Brown there at the scene. And we'll keep you up to date in developments, of course, on RNZ. That's five people having been injured in a stabbing at Dunedin's Countdown supermarket on Cumberland Street at around 2:30pm today. Oh, kia mo tono mai koutou katoa. Coming up on the program today, with house prices increasing 21% in the last year, are the handbrakes that have been applied enough? And look, do tell us if you've been looking for a house for some time. Get in touch. What have you been finding there? You can email the panel at rnz.co.nz. New Zealand teens among the world's biggest internet users, 42 hours a week online, well above the 35 hours a week average, but is it a good thing? And an Auckland congestion charge could hit the poor the hardest. Councillors warn, would you support, say, a $3.50 charge to enter the Auckland CBD? And a movie scene that's had a profound effect on you. An interesting article on The Guardian about that we discussed. With me this afternoon, we have, for the first time on the panel, George Estiliano, who is a government relations consultant and former ministerial advisor in our Wellington studio. Georgie, kia ora, and a pleasure to have you on the panel.
Kia ora, Wallace. It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. And Chris Clark, who is the CEO of the Wilberforce Foundation and chair of Te Whakaora Tangata, which is a charitable trust. Chris, kia ora.
Kia ora, Wallace. Hello, Georgie.
Hello.
And for our story of the day, Rob Kelly, Katapia Kwe. Rob, how are you? No, Rob isn't there with us today, so why don't we go straight into, just a moment, he might be joining us a little bit later, why don't we go straight into, I've been thinking, Georgie, it's your first time on the program, would you like to start?
Oh, well, why not? Stuck me in the deep end there. Well, I have been thinking about the lack of men in early childhood education, and that's not just a random thought. I have a six-month-old little boy, and we are starting the old hunt for a daycare in Wellington, and I have not yet come across any male teachers, which I think is a terrible shame. When I was pregnant in earnest before the sleep deprivation kicked in, I read a few parenting books, and one really stood out to me. It was by a Kiwi couple, Richard Aston and Ruth Kerr. They said little boys especially need male role models in their life. So I think it's just sad that my son will learn from a very early, tender age that childcare is a woman's job, which is remarkable in 2021 that there still is that stigma.
There's quite a lack of males in childcare, isn't there? I know that my little toddler, Junior, he has. I think there's one male in the daycare centre, and I'll give a bit of a plug for Dylan because you know, little Junior gets on with all of the teachers, but he has a real bond with Dylan. It's something quite pretty special there.
Well, absolutely, and I know I was having a drink with a friend on Friday night, and his son attends Hill Street Daycare up near Parliament in Wellington. And the under two room there is led by a man named Dave. So shout out to Dave from Hill Street Daycare.
Cool. Okay, time for I've Been Thinking with Chris. What's been on your mind, Chris?
Well, Wallace, I've realised that I'm an endangered species because I was once a CEO District Health Board, and not only are we all now endangered, also we're not much liked. But when I was a CEO of a District Health Board, one of the biggest challenges that I faced was not actually the subject of the current health reforms. It wasn't a question of what structures do we need. It was a much more basic question. And the question was this. It was, how do we motivate and engage staff to address issues well beyond what their day job was about? So in other words, how do we raise morale in our district health board and across the communities? So the issues weren't about lack of money. They weren't about new technologies. They weren't about rising expectations. It was really, how did I tap into the sense of call that so many of our staff had? And this mattered because many of them came to our district health board in their early 20s, and actually this came their second home. They actually spent most of their life involved, in my case, in Hawke's Bay in the district health board there. So for them, it really mattered what happened in this community. And now, I was the chief executive, but I very quickly learned I wasn't the most powerful person in the organisation. The most powerful people in my organisation were the doctors and the nurses and the therapists. And although I had titular power, they had moral power. And so I had to appeal to their moral power if I was to win their hearts and minds. And secondly, although I might be the CEO, the reality was, if I went on strike, nobody noticed. But if an orderly went on strike, paid maybe a tenth of what I was paid, we had to close the hospital. And so for me, the challenge at the moment is that I really wonder if the government has joined the dots in terms of the impact of COVID on the medical profession, the impact of putting a pay freeze there, the impact on the fact that many of our staff are just simply exhausted. And add to that now that we're doing a health reform, and however good or bad that reform is, it's going to take a long time.
Let's
it's going to lead to a lot of disruption.
Let's touch on the pay freeze. Let's go over to Georgia. What do you think about that?
Bit of a kick in the guts, wasn't it? I mean, and also a PR disaster, really. That
not a kick in the guts for those under 60k, though.
No, I've seen the clarification today, hence my point on it being not a great PR story thus far, having to clarify things after the fact, you know, the old saying that explaining is losing. It just seems a bit out of touch, I think, still, partly because the damage has been done, right?
I want to, before we move on, I want to ask you, because here, I mean, so you were a CEO of a DHB, right?
Yeah.
Hawke's Bay, as I understand it.
That's right, and the Chatham Islands.
And the Chatham Islands. Did you see this coming, these major new health reforms, all of a sudden the end of the 21 DHBs?
No, I didn't. I was fascinated. In fact, I was in Dunedin when the announcement came out with actually a whole lot of health people. And all of us were actually incredibly surprised, actually at the courage of the government. But I guess what worried me was something I've seen with so many reforms in the past, and I've been involved centralising and decentralising in terms of health services, is the thinking that actually by changing the anatomy, somehow or other we fix the system, but we don't actually address the bigger questions, which is how do we join this all up? How do we win the hearts and minds of our health professionals? And above all, what do we expect of a modern health system? So I think we've gone part of the way, but more ambitious than I thought, but not far enough.
Okay. Now, quite a bit of response, both in house prices. I know this sounds unbelievable, Wallace. My husband and I earn $200,000 a year and cannot buy a house in Wellington. The reason is the deposit. It's only the last couple of years we've been earning a lot, but we haven't been able to save fast enough to get that 200K deposit. We absolutely do not want or expect anything flash, and we're just being laughed out of the tender process all over town. One agent said, if you're not looking to spend $1.2 million, you're wasting my time. So we've got a bit of response on that, and also a lot regarding male teachers in childcare. Totally agree on the need for male teachers, early childhood and primary. Educare Adventure in Whitby has one, and he's great.
Oh, very good.
5 to 5, let's have a bit of a story of the day to take us up to 4 o'clock. Rob Kelly, kia ora.
Kia ora, Wallace. Kia ora, everyone.
Hello.
Hi. Right, I want to talk about mistakes. We all made mistakes.
Of which you've made many.
Well, yes, Wallace, but I look forward to your tell-all book about Rob Kelly, the hidden story Wallace Chapman reveals.
I'm just teasing.
The Manchester Guardian. Did everyone know it was from Manchester? I didn't. Georgie's nodding.
And it's 200 years old this month.
Oh,
oh,
you know it.
Congratulations.
You know it.
Mazel tov, the Manchester Guardian. And they've released a series of quite good editorials to celebrate 200 years. And one of them is all about the mistakes that the Guardian has made over the course of its 200 years. So I just thought we could talk a little bit about people creating news with vigour and authority and it being completely and utterly wrong. It's fake news before fake news was fake news. All right, Wallace, what do you reckon the Manchester Guardian had to say about asbestos?
200 years ago?
No, early 20th century. We're talking the 1920s.
The new Wonder Fibre.
Absolutely. Let's build everything out of it. It's the best. It's the best stuff. Nothing, and I repeat, nothing can go wrong. Let's have a little play around with climate. What do you think The Guardian was predicting in the 1970s, Georgie?
The planet would just be a lovely, warm, temperate place to be, and we could all sunbathe in the middle of winter.
It's a very strong guess. What do we think, Auckland?
I was going to say, come to England and live in the balmy conditions of South England.
The tropical isles of the northeast. No, they were actually predicting an ice age to come at the beginning of the 21st century, and that you could almost walk across the English Channel. It wasn't to be.
I must at this stage do a bit of a shout out to the Otago Daily Times, who have a column called 100 Years Ago Today, which I'm always a bit of a fan of, Rob, because you can go back 100 years and see actually quite weirdly some of the same sorts of issues crop up again and again and again.
Yeah, they're what we would call perennials.
Yep.
And there are a few things, and they essentially, are we warm enough? Are we too cold? Have we got enough to eat? Is local government a mess? Is central government a mess? We should sort out central and local government. Oh no, it's a mess again. It does seem to be that kind of cycle. And the Manchester Guardian's quite open about its role in it. It also talks on a more serious note about kind of its role in the emancipation argument in the 19th century, which was a very divisive period. It also talks about the quiet radicalism of the paper and how ever since it started, there's been this desire to be not taking apart things, but looking at it from a side. So I think it's an interesting thing, particularly with the British media. We often think about it as being extremely partisan.
Here's one for you, Rob. Martin yep. Tauranga said, I understand, we must fact check this, I'd love to know, but I want to understand the Guardian once misspelled its name on the front page
yes.
and is affectionately known as the Grawniad.
The Grawniad. I can highly recommend if anyone wants to go back and listen to some episodes of I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue from the 1990s, the British perennial comedy show. They do fake headlines, and the joke in all of them is that The Guardian just misspells everything. Yeah. I think that's unfair to The Guardian. I think that was an 80s and 90s problem that's been somewhat rectified in the digital age. But it's a very funny thing to be known for. And I just think you've got to give them props for standing up and saying, look, we're getting it wrong and we'll own it.
Yep, kia ora, Rob. Thank you for that. Would love to hear a discussion about buying an apartment. They are much cheaper, but I've heard banks are reluctant to lend. Yes, we can cover that another time. So a lot of our housing stories, emails coming through. Chris Clark and Georgie Stigliano with me on the panel this afternoon. Monday, stay with us.